This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find a balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
Hi, I'm Brittany Wagner, and I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Fardy.
I'm really excited to get to talk to Brittany Wagner today and have a productive conversation with her. She is the breakout star of Last Chance U, the first two seasons. And the fact that she's got a book out, we're able to chat about that. Next Chance U is the book. And, you know, I mean, I didn't know what to expect going into this conversation initially. In fact, I even mentioned to her right out of the gate that I started to watch some of the series, and then I completely understood why I wanted to have a conversation with her. So we get into the idea of choice. We get into the idea of overwhelm. We get into a whole bunch of stuff during this conversation. It went in places that I both expected it to go in terms of the questions that I was wanting to ask her, and then into places I didn't know it was going to go. And that's all because Brittany is a fascinating person to have a conversation with. So let's get to it. A productive conversation with Brittany Wagner. Brittany, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today on the podcast. I'm really excited to have this opportunity to chat with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So before we hit record, I was completely transparent and I mentioned to you, like, I had Last Chance U on my Netflix queue for a while. But like most people, you add things to your queue and then you look at the shiny new stuff that shows up. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, you know, I should probably watch the stuff that's in my list. So I'm like, well, I'm going to be talking to Brittany. So let me dig into this a bit, because I went through the book called Next Chance U, Tools, Tips, and Tough Love for Bringing Your A Game to Life. And I said, I want to see this in action. And so I watched some episodes. And wow, it was like one of those things where I didn't expect to get what I got, but it was like there was just such an authenticity that I really like, because reality television can be one of those things where it looks kind of like, you know what I mean? Like it can come off a bit, you know, I mean, overly scripted, so on and so forth, but I didn't get that vibe. So when I want to know the lessons that you took from that experience and putting them into this book, like, were there anything that when you went through the process of those first two seasons, because that's how long you were on for, that's how long that went through for you. Were there any things that, you know, you took from that experience? You're like, you know, I need to apply this to the writing of this book, like making sure that the authenticity, the vulnerability, And frankly, the moxie, like, as you were here amongst like these, I mean, you were, I remember seeing the one scene in the first episode where you're talking to all the athletes and you're just bringing it. You're telling them like it, and they're like, all right. And, but yet there was no, but it wasn't like, I am the authority figure and you are beholden to me. It was a very, it was great candor. So What lessons from that whole experience of filming that were you able to bring to the book, say, like, you know, I need to bring that level of candor, vulnerability, and authenticity to the book?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I think when I was filming the show, nowhere in my brain was there a book. Right. I never thought anyone would watch the show, so I surely never thought anyone would care what I had to say in a book. And then you know, years later, people still seem to care what I have to say. So I decided to write the book. And I think you're spot on. There was no ghostwriter, which might be obvious. I don't know, but
it was very it was a very conversational read, which I appreciate because I know that some you're right. Blogs read different than books read different than conversations. But because I think people who pick up this book will be familiar from you from the show as well, right? You know, there's going to be that there's not going to be that leap there, which I think is good in this instance. So the fact you didn't, I mean, I'm glad you didn't use a ghostwriter because I think it would have come off completely differently.
Yeah. Yeah. So I realized that I was smart enough to know and had enough awareness to know that the thing that I think people gravitated towards was the genuineness and the authenticity of the show, kind of just my candor and with the athletes. And so I knew that I had to do that in the book, that I needed to be genuine, that I needed to write it myself, that it needed to have kind of the Southern. A lot of people gravitated towards the accent and the Southernness of the show. And so, you know, I knew, which that's who I am. Sure. So it's not like I was faking it.
Right.
But I knew I needed to bring a little bit of that. I did have editors from other parts of the country. And so a couple times the editors would come back and X out a Southern slang. And I would say, nope, we're leaving it in. No, you're not Xing out that one. You know, so yeah, I think that I very much tried to do that. The thing that was the hardest for me about the book, because I didn't really do it in the show,
right,
was my personal life.
Mm.
You know, in the show, there's the two scenes of, you know, in one scene in both seasons, really, of me and my daughter, but it's very vague and it's 5 seconds. I mean, you're getting a very small snippet of what being a single mom and, you know, my home was like. And so I think the book, I realized that it was really important for me to be honest and for me to be open about my own life because I didn't want people to see me as I'm up here and you're down here and I'm preaching to you and telling you, you know, all the things that you're doing wrong or that you need to do better. I wanted to come from a place of, look, I am here with you. Like I am on my face too.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to do that, I had to be honest about my life and the things that I've been through and the things that I still struggle with. And that was hard because I now know that once you put something out there, you can't take it back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. And so there was like this moment where it was like, do I really want everyone to know, you know, mm-hmm. that I've been in therapy my whole life and that am I really wanting everyone to know these things? And so, but the answer is yes, because I think it's important for everyone to know that we're all a product of our experiences and we've all been through stuff that we're not real excited to share, but the vulnerability is where the growth happens. And so I got in a fetal position on the floor and just put it all out there.
It reminds me a bit of another show that my wife and I have been watching called The Morning Show, where Jennifer Aniston's character like has to write that part in the book that she doesn't really want. Like her editor's like, you got to put that in the book. Like, no, but no. I'm like, no, that's the thing. So in the show, you're right, you offered those glimpses, but people are like, I want to know more because the relatability factor. So many people write books that say, here's how you can bring your A game and here's how you can live your best life. And then they're coming from this place of, you know, privilege or, you know, this place of they've never really lived in, quote, the real world. Right. Like they've always had this. And that did not come across in this book, which means that, and especially in the relationship that you had in the show with, again, my limited experience watching it with the athletes, with the younger people there, that it was, there was no sense of elitism or this status that was there. How important is it, you know, for people who are going to pick up this book? And I love the title Next Chance You, right? Like the idea of, you know, there's more to it than just one chance and then there's the last chance. Because, I mean, the whole premise of that show was like the last chance should lead to the next chance. How important was it for you to break down this book in a way that people who lead crazy, hectic lives like you, single mom, doing all the things, could distill it down and go, these are actionable steps that I can take bit by bit? How important was that for you to put into this book, and maybe explain the process of you saying, here's why these things made it into the book?
Yeah, it was super important to me because how many books have I read? I'm a self-help guru. If there's a self-help book out there, chances are I've read it. But how many have I read that I've gotten to the end and thought, okay, well, that was good. And now what? now what do I do with all of this information that has now left my brain because it was so complicated?
Right.
And I did not want that. Just like in the show, people are like, why were you at East Mississippi Community College in Scuba, Mississippi? Like, of all places, why were you there? And I was there because that was where I felt like I could impact the most people. Mm-hmm. That's where I felt like I had the ability to change the most lives in that amount of time. And the same goes for the book. Why write a book if you're going to write it and you're not changing anyone's life? Mm-hmm. No one's going to be able to take anything out of it and use it to help themselves. And that was really the purpose of me writing it, was to say, okay, but I want it to be, I want steps. Like, I want people to read that and think like, oh, I can do that. Mm-hmm. Something that's so far over my head that I'm reading it and then going, put that on the shelf. So there was that moment where it was like, what can I, and again, I took a lot of my own things I've actually done. I mean, I think I tell the story in the book. I think it's a chapter on growth. And interestingly enough, when the show came out, the word used most to describe me was patient.
Right.
And every article you read, oh, this patient woman, she has so much patience, 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 patience. And the funny thing about that was about a year before we started filming the show, I really had hit a wall, I felt like, in my ability to relate and help these athletes. And I started looking at, okay, what can I do? Like, it's me, I can't blame everyone else here. Like, I'm not who I need to be. And so I made a list of the qualities that I felt like, I needed to have in order to be the best counselor I could be. And on the top of that list was patience. And I had to be honest with myself, whoopsie, this is the quality that I need to be effective. And this is the one that I don't have. I'm not a patient person.
Right.
And so I worked for a solid year. I wore the rubber band around my wrist. I tell that story in the book. And every time I felt like I came back with a snappy comment or was quick to judge or wasn't exhibiting the patience, I would snap myself with that rubber band and then make myself redo the situation right then and there with some patience. And I worked on it hard for a year, not really knowing if I had actually made the change or not, because I don't think we give ourselves the credit and grace that we deserve sometimes. So I don't know that I really recognized that I had actually done it. Until I watched the show.
Right. Well, and the interesting thing is what you did is you put some simple tactics in place to try to do it, right? Like the whole like elastic thing, which is, and not only that, I think that the key thing as you go through a book like this, and I believe me, I've not only read my fair share of personal growth and self-development books, but there's some that just seem so far-fetched. There's like no way that, I love the work of David Goggins. I think he's a fantastic, person to look to, but you're like, I am not going to be the guy that does that many pull-ups. Right. I'm not that, but I get, but he explains it and I'm like, okay, so how is that transferable? Right. And I think, and what was interesting about watching the show and then going through the book is that what you talk about in the book is number one, I think breaking things down. You've got the pencil exercises in here, right? Where people are supposed to write things down. And I think that's like to make it actionable and to have it stick. But not only that, you don't create that the expectation, nor did you when I saw you dealing with the athletes at the university, at the college, of this has to happen all at once right now. Like you're like the one scene that stands out. And this is important. I think this relates to productivity is you bring up the point, like what is the grade point average that you need to get into this school? Like, will a C get you there? And of course there was the joke, like a C equals a C. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And you let that roll because, and you didn't go, no. Like you were very much like this is the place. And yes, there has to be some levity to this situation. Right. But you're like, listen, your expectations were stunningly, not just observant, but real. Like they were realistic. Like, look, you're not going to get A's all the way through, and but you certainly aren't going to be the person that gets C's all the way through because you won't hit your goal. So let's get some balance there. And in the book, you did. Correct me if I'm wrong, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. But your thought process is: look, you're not going to be able to do all these things all at once. So give yourself that grace. Give yourself that. And what did it take for you to start going down that path? Because it's someone who is really motivated and wants to help people. I think that's a struggle. Is that they want to be able to do it all to make the world, to make the people they impact better in as many ways as possible. What did it take for you to realize, like, hey, listen, I can only do these things and build upon them, as opposed to trying to do the grand gesture of self improvement for myself so I can impact others all at once?
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today.
You know, I think that came a lot from living in Mississippi my whole life, which I love that state. I've got nothing but great things to say about it. But when you live in the poorest state in our country and you're faced with not having enough resources and not having enough opportunity and constantly having the negative labels placed on, you know, the people around you, you and the people around you, I think you start to become very resourceful, you know,
right?
if you want to succeed in that place, you become very resourceful. You know, at East Mississippi, they filmed me with football, but I had 200 athletes. Yeah. I worked with our entire athletic population. So I had 200 athletes. I was one person to 200 athletes. I couldn't do it all. And I wasn't going to be able to impact everyone in the same way. And I think it took me a while to get to that realization in my career that I wasn't a failure. If a student athlete failed, or I don't even want to call it failed, if a student athlete didn't meet my expectation, mm-hmm. it didn't mean he was a failure. It didn't mean I was a failure. It just meant it didn't work today. Yep. I mean, you know, and I think you almost had to have that attitude. Or you wouldn't last. I mean, you were gonna burn out and quit and get so frustrated that you weren't gonna do it very long. And I had already been in the business 15 years, you know, when the show came around. So I had learned from a young age, you know, early on in my career. Look, if I'm gonna do this, then I can't take this personally, and I've gotta get an attitude here that I'm going to go all in and I'm going to do the work, but I'm not always going to have it right. I'm not always going to get it right. Every day is not going to be a good day, you know, mm-hmm. that they're not always going to get it right. It's not what I do for one student is not going to work for another. And I learned that it's okay for me to plant the seed.
Right.
I'm not going to watch the transformation of every athlete in front of my face, but I have to have the attitude that I have planted the seed and someone else will water it and it will grow for someone else. But it doesn't mean that I'm a failure. And I think I took that attitude and I expanded it to all areas of my life. You know, I got a divorce. Does that mean that I'm a failure in relationship? Nope. It just means on that day, that one didn't work out.
Right.
You know, and so mm-hmm. it's like, well, here we go again. Let's try this again and again and again. And I think, you know, that's really where the mindset for the book came from is, look, you're not going to get it all right on the first try. You're probably not going to get it all right on the second try. And there may be chapters of this book that you rip out and go, no. And that's okay. But I think that it's the attitude of continuing to try, like continuing to put forth the effort and not getting in that mentality of it's never going to work. You know, I'm stuck. It's never going to happen, because that's the dangerous spot to be in a career, in a relationship, just in life, in that dangerous negative self-talk of I suck, you know. Right. And so that was really the point, was find something to and continue to put one foot in front of the other in at least one area of your life.
So I want to ask you a couple of quick questions about the learning that you went. Not just for two questions about very different and where you learned things from. So first off, we'll talk about the book. As you were writing the book, Next Chance You, what did you learn about yourself going through that process?
Oh gosh, I learned, I think how to be, honestly, I do not consider myself a writer. I don't consider myself, you read the book and I tell you right off the bat, I never considered myself smart, really. I mean, in growing up and in getting an education, I never thought I was the smart one. And I think I learned through the process of writing that book that I am like that, that I am smart and I can write and I can tell stories well. And I don't know that I believed that about myself before writing the book.
All right. Now I'm going to ask,
it was good. Yeah.
I'm going to ask you another question now. I mean, obviously when you're in the throes of the role that you had at the college, you're teaching others, but certainly they're probably teaching you something. So what did you learn from the people that you were there to impact and help? What's maybe one thing that stands out? You're like, I learned this from either this particular athlete or from this group of athletes or from this, you know, this particular time that we were together. Because I think a lot of people, especially when they write a book and there's this level of expertise, that there's, again, this level of, let me impart my wisdom, but I think we all learn from others along the way. So what would be an example of what you learned during the process of the role that you had?
I think a specific example, I remember it like it was yesterday, was I had an athlete who, this happens in athletics a lot. You have athletes who blatantly break the rules. They blatantly fail a drug test. They know they're going to be drug tested on this day at this time. And they go in and it comes back and they failed it. And you're like, really? You know, you knew. Why did you do it? You knew you were going to be drug tested. And I think I had that attitude a lot. Like, why can't you just do what you're supposed to do? You know, what's right. your problem? What's wrong with you? And I had an athlete one day who had failed a drug test. He had moved on. He was at the next institution. He'd failed a drug test. And I was so mad. And he looked at me and he said, look, do you think I woke up like deciding that I was going to ruin my life today? Like, you think I woke up and like said, today's the day that I'm going to smoke and fail a drug test and blow it all away? And he's like, I didn't decide that. Like, it's not a decision that I made to ruin my life. I don't know how to cope with my life. And the coping mechanism that I learned at a very young age was to smoke.
Right.
So if you want me to not fail a drug test, teach me what I don't know. Like, teach me how to cope with the pressure and stress of what is my life. And I guess I maybe knew that, you know, I mean, I knew that. I was smart enough to know that, but I wasn't offering that to other people.
Right.
You know, I was coming in like a bulldozer with judgment for how can you not do better? And then when he's in my car, he says that to me and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, it's yeah. like, how have I been alive this long in my life without knowing this? And it completely changed me that day. I mean, I don't think I ever went into a situation with that attitude again.
It actually brings to light something you talk about in chapter 9, which is be the solution. And it sounds like in that experience, that's exactly what happened. He was the solution. So I learned when I worked at Costco, I was one of the managers there, and I would bring a problem to the assistant warehouse manager. And he would say, if you're going to come to me with a problem, come to me with a solution. So it was very much like, so that, and that pattern, and it's really interesting to me that those little simple gotchas that kind of stick, right? Because there's a lot of experience I had in that environment, but that one is the one one of the big ones I always take away is like, if you're going to come to, and I teach this to my kids, if you're going to come to me with a problem, come to me with a solution. How important, first off, not even how important, but why do you think people fail to do that? Why in your experience, because you've probably come across more people that come across and don't tell you, hey, this is why. This is, you need to come to me with this. You need to teach me how to cope. Not teach me how to follow the rules, but how to cope. Why do you think it's so either challenging or so maybe there's this level of lack of attention to this, but that people, when they come with a problem, whether it's, you know, related to, you know, jet life stuff, or it's related to athletics or academics or what have you, that they're not as forthcoming with the solutions. Is it a lack of belief that they can come up with it? Is it a lack of insight? What do you think it is?
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today.
I think for adults and in authoritative situations, it's that we want to sit in the problem because the problem is about somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, how could you come to college without a pencil? That's right. Terrible. What's wrong with you? Do you know where you are? Because of that attitude, I'm up here, you're down here, I'm better. And rather than just handing you the pencil mm-hmm. and being done with it, I gotta beat you up. Because the problem isn't me. It's not about me. It's you. How dare you come to me, such a smart, you know, title-driven person without a pencil? That's ridiculous. So I think for a lot of adults, that's why we don't want to, you know, we get to beat people up when we can sit in a problem that we think has nothing to do with us. I think for, you know, young people in this situation, the athlete, you know, I think it's a lot of times not, we make it about ourselves, right. You know, that, so it's opposite of that. It's
the ego kicking in. Yeah.
And I, you know, or I'm, something's wrong with me. You know, like I'm dumb, I'm broken, I'm something. And so something's wrong with me. And so there is no solution because right. It's me.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I'm just broken. And so we can't open up our space enough to see that it's, that there is a solution.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
right.
Because we think, well, I was just born this way, you know? Yeah.
And I think it takes the right empathy, I think, is one of the keys here, right? To take. Now, I want to ask you, as we get close to wrapping up, overwhelm, because that's I talk about this a lot in my work, is like overwhelm. There's like three elements of it. There's overload, over choice, and overcommitment, right? But overwhelm is one of those things that kind of, it's there. It's always bubbling under the surface, and it loves to show up, especially when you have a choice to make, or when it's game time, or when it's like, or when it's not game time, when in between those big hyper moments where it's like, you know, okay, the you know, you've got a game this week, you've got a game next week, or you've got like a big project this week or another big project like down the line, and overwhelm can kind of be there because you're thinking about all this stuff. I'm going to use you as an example. So you've got Courtney Cox involved in a project on your life, which, and you bring this up very early on in the book. That's got to be, how do you keep that from like all the things going on? You've got a book launch. You're still getting a lot, you know, you still got a lot of notice around the show on Netflix. Which by the way, they're in like what, season 5 now? So we're talking like, you know, you're from the early days of the episode of the show where the old Netflix logo shows up when you first streaming it instead of the new one. But then you've got this, you know, I'll put in air quotes, biopic, like this story that's being developed. How, in your situation, how do you deal with the overwhelm of just not just the amount of things that are going on, but there's a gravitas to them too. That's at a pretty high level that you think would help someone who maybe isn't, you know, getting a biopic made or have all that press. Like there is some transferability there. So how do you deal with that?
Well, I think for me, I don't get too high. Don't get too low.
Okay.
I don't get overly excited. You know, I think everyone else is way more excited right now about this scripted series. And believe me, I love Courtney Cox. I love Michael Strahan. But my excitement level is still right here in the middle because I've had other things in development that have crashed and burned.
Yep.
And so, you know, in writing the book, the day it came out, you know, that my family and friends were super excited. I was about here, you know, mm-hmm. Everyone's like, why are you not overjoyed? Because, I mean,
you're managing expectations.
I've learned that I don't get too high. And then when you don't get too high, you don't get too low because you don't see things as a crash and burn. You see things as, you know, okay, this didn't work out. Something else will. And so I think I just kind of always try to stay. My expectation level is about right here for all things, you know, and
what have you
nothing's done? Ever super exciting or super disappointing.
So what have you done to do that? Because I think a lot of people would love to be able to feel that. Like there's this idea of that seems like a very reasoned stoic approach to things, which is like Ryan Holiday talks about this kind of stuff in his work. And I think I really try meditation, I think, is one thing that helps me with it. And just this sense of, but I also think, and maybe you can speak to this, is that if you chase opportunities consistently and some of them don't work out, you get kind of, I wouldn't say numb, but the immunity level, the ability to kind of go, okay, on to the next sticks out. So for somebody who's like, wow, I'd really love to be able to react that way to that, what are some thoughts that you have around that? Because I think a lot of people could benefit from that because I think a lot of people spend too much at one end of the spectrum or the other.
Yeah, I think for me, I've learned that platform doesn't equal success. TV show doesn't equal success. Mm. Book doesn't equal success. And I think before the show came out, I sat at my desk in Scuba, Mississippi, thinking, oh, I'm about to have this Netflix show come out and it's all going to come to me. Like I'm going to sit back here and put my feet up and everything's going to land in my lap because I'm on Netflix. And it didn't happen. Right. I mean, you know, it didn't happen. I didn't make any money. I didn't get all these opportunities. Like, I just kind of, and, you know, I was given a platform and I was given a platform where I could create opportunity and I could create work, but the work was still going to have to be done. And the only person that could do it was me. And so, you know, the platform doesn't equal success. The job title doesn't equal success. The dollar amount doesn't equal success. The city that you are dying to move to isn't going to equal success. The relationship isn't going to equal success. No matter what that thing is that you think is going to be the end all be all, it's not, because the reality is you're still going to have to work to make it work. You know, just because I was on Netflix, you know, yeah, some people knew, people know my name that would have never known my name. Some, you know, the doors may have been open for me because I was on Netflix, but I had to go through them and I had to, you know, find the key, create the key, open the door, walk through it, do the work. And so I you know, I just don't have that attitude anymore that there's just going to be this quick fix and like someone's going to, you know, it's just going to all fall into place. I realize that it will only fall into place and it will only work and it will only be successful if I am maxing out effort. And there are just some things that aren't as important to me anymore because I don't want to put that much effort into them. You know, I don't want to, there's just some things that I'm willing to work for. And then there's some things that I'm just not willing to work for. And so, you know, it all kind of, it's perspective, I think. And it's not, I didn't have this perspective before the show. If you had told me before the show that all of this was going to happen, I would have thought that I was just going to sit back and like it was all going to come. You know, I would have had no idea that it meant that I had to work my tail off for 5 years, you know, to get all this.
And it's the illusion. I think there's a lot of illusion there for people who are like, they don't see what goes on behind the scenes. They just see the success story.
Yeah. They don't see the rejection.
No, because that's not sexy. That's not the sexy stuff.
I mean, the reality is there's been other TV shows in the works, you know, there's been rejection and there's been others, you know, there was a lot of pitches to a lot of publishers. And, you know, I mean, they don't see all of the rejection and the disappointment and the hard work. They just see this. You know, they just see my Instagram and they're like, man, she's got it made.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you think about the news cycle, a lot of bad news shows up. That's what tends to dominate news. It would be almost interesting to see, but then you see the success stories like this person did this person, like that's the bright spots. I almost would also love to see, like, you know, Mike Vardy get rejected by book deal, like for the fourth time, like instead of, you know, here's the book deal. No one announces. I actually think it would be refreshing instead of for every book deal you get like, well, turned down again today.
Yep.
Like, and not just like a social media pithy update, but like a newsletter or blog post. Like, you know, when you get those blog posts or announcements, like I got a book deal in here and I've done it. It'd be great to say, you know, like, hey, guess what? Got rejected again for a book deal. Don't worry. You're also going to hear the announcement when I get a book deal, but expect at least 20 of these before you get the one that,
absolutely.
And I think that would be a way to go, because then it tempers expectations, because I think that's what a lot of people struggle with. And as we wrap up, I want to ask you one final question. I tend to ask this to guests that I have a conversation with. If when someone picks up this book and they read Next Chance You, and they want to take, they go through the book and they're like, you know what, what do I do? What's the simple, and you talked about this earlier, like you read a book and you're like, okay, what do I do now? I want you to tell the listener right now, what's one simple single action they can take when they're done reading this book that's gonna give them some impact, whether small or big, they're gonna notice it. You know, especially if they take the time to chronicle it, like you mentioned in the book. But what's one simple action they can take today?
Put your phone down.
That is simple. Not easy, but
it's
simple.
It's easier than you think it is. It's actually really easy. Pick it up and put it down. You know, I think that I it's chapter one.
Yep.
And it's chapter one for a reason. We are not showing up for our own lives. Like, we are going through the motions. We are checking the boxes. We are like a well-oiled machine, just getting up and going through these emotions every day, and not, we don't know how we feel. We don't know how we think about it. We don't know why we do it anymore. We're just doing it. We don't even know. If you ask people, what are you putting effort towards today? What part of your life are you putting effort towards? There's a lot of people that couldn't even answer that question. Like, we don't even know anymore what the areas of our lives are and what we're actually putting real effort towards making work. And I think that's where you start. Like, put your phone down, put the limitation. If you don't have the discipline to do it yourself, go into your settings and go to screen time and limit how much you can look at social media and be on your phone, and then put it down and sit where your feet are. Be where your feet are. Sit down in a seat and be where your seat is. And be present in that exact moment. Show up for that exact moment and think, like, how do I feel? How does family dinner sitting around the table make me feel? And just think about, like, your life and what makes you happy in that moment and what doesn't. And we don't do it. We don't do it because we are constantly, you know, scrolling.
Yep, consumption mode. You know, actually, last point, because as you mentioned this, it brought something to – I mentioned this to my daughter more than a few days ago, but I know I've brought it up a couple of times. Before we hit record, I mentioned that she overheard you on my TV last night. I'm like, wow, there's like one white lady amongst all these athletes. And I'm like, yeah, and she's kicking ass. but – I'm sure as a parent, you know, you have those moments. And I mean, I'm a father, so I'm coming at it from, a different perspective to a degree. But there's moments where my daughter or my son, when we're having conversations, my brain, I'm in the moment, but then my brain cycles back to that moment where I'm walking through the hospital carrying them. Or I remember like certain moments and I'm like, oh my goodness, where that person that's having an articulate, almost adult-like conversation with me, I wandered through the hallway singing John Mayer songs to him. And it's just that moment, I get goosebumps right now just thinking about it, that moment of fascination of how so fast time goes when you, even when you pay attention, it still flies by pretty quickly. I'm sure you probably have moments that are very similar, especially, and I think almost when that happens in the throes of the frenetic pace of life, that to me is almost like a signal, like, whoa, stop for a second. And not only pay attention to the rest of this conversation and maybe circle back and say, sorry, Grace, I got lost in a second while I was thinking about carrying it. And she goes, okay, Dad, you're a weirdo. but though there are those moments, right, where you should, and I think it's just the way the brain works, where you catch yourself and act on that as opposed to just letting it slide by and go, oh my God, time moves back by so quickly. Oh, well, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Like, I'm sure you have those moments, right?
Absolutely. I do. Yeah. There's days where I did have someone give me very good advice when my daughter's 13. And when she was a baby, someone said, be very careful because you're going to find yourself wishing for the next stage. Mm-hmm. You know, you're changing diapers and not getting sleep. And you find yourself saying, like, I just can't wait till they sleep through the night.
Yep.
And then they sleep through the night. And then I can't wait till they can walk and do things for themselves. And then it's, I can't wait until they sit down. You know, you're constantly kind of wishing for the next stage. And I had someone tell me, don't do that. Like, stop yourself because it will be gone and you will be wanting to go back to the first stage again when it's gone. And I was always very aware of that when I would be sitting there thinking, like, I don't want to change another diaper, you know? And then I would stop myself and be like, oh no, but there will be a day where I don't have any to change. And so it's a conscious decision. And now at 13, I'm finding myself, gosh, I can't, you know, I'm ready for you to drive.
That's a whole thing. Trust me.
I'm doing is taxiing you around. But I stop myself and go, no, because then I'll miss the heck out of you. Yep. I'll wish I was in the car with you trying to get you to tell me about your day. And again, it's work. I mean, it's a practice. And I've had 13 years to practice it with her of just actually being in the moment with her. And now I'm flipping the script on her and saying, hey, put your phone down. Yeah. Put your phone down and talk to your mother. You know?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a practice, for sure.
And what's fast, first off, number one, I guess, last thing, if someone's struggling with this, you already gave the elastic trick. So if you need to do that, just snap the elastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting thing, because it's also the long game, right? Like, you don't get the payoff every single day when you do that either. Like, it's not like, you know, and again, it's the difference. I mean, this is a very, very reductive comparison, but it's like the difference between writing a blog, social media, blog post, book. Social media, instant gratification. I did it. Check. Blog post, it took me a bit longer, but I did it. The book, No. That's like a marathon. You're not going to get the payoff until it's like out. And like anything else, like with your kids, I mean, you practice that, you spend time with them. They're not going to thank you every single day. They're not going to be like, oh, thanks for being. But one day they're going to say, like, you know what? And even if they don't, the reward is in and of itself, but it's the long game. It's not like, you know, oh, I can check off the box that I, you know, did that. I think you're right. I think we get obsessed with checking off as many boxes as possible instead of wondering if these are boxes we should be checking off in the first place.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Brittany,
I think the athletes taught me that, honestly. Yeah. You know, I think the athletes were the ones that taught me before my daughter was born about, you know, that I'm not going to always be thanked. You know, they're not going to always like me. I'm not always going to be appreciated, but it's the long, keep going. Cause one day they'll look back and go, wow, I'm sure I'm glad that lady invested in me.
The book is called Next Chance You: Tools, Tips, and Tough Love for Bringing Your A Game to Life. Brittany, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today. Where can people pick up the book and keep up with you?
You can keep up with me on Instagram, Twitter, Brittany_MS Girl, Facebook fan page, Brittany Wagner, or I have a website, BrittanyWagner.com. People can buy the book anywhere that books are sold. If you walk in a place and they don't have it, ask for it. But Amazon, it's also available in an Audible version, and I narrate it myself. So you get the good old Southern accent reading it to you.
Nice.
So yeah.
Awesome. Brittany, thanks so much for having a productive conversation with me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Big thanks to Brittany for joining me on the program. If you want to check out everything that we talked about, get some links, all that fun stuff, go to productivityist.com/podcast412, and you'll get all of that and so much more. You'll be able to directly visit our podcast sponsors page from there as well. All you need to do, if you want to go there directly and support some of the sponsors you listen to on today's program, just go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors. Another way to support the show is subscribe. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, just hit the subscribe button. That way you can easily search through the archives, find all of our past episodes, and you won't miss a single episode, including the one that's happening next week, which is where we're going to talk about love as a business strategy. Yes, Muhammad Anwar and Chris Peter are going to be joining me for that. You don't want to miss that. Until then, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.